now. This is Android Buffet, episode number 137, recorded Monday, March 4th, 2013, in 5, 4, 3, 2, and 1. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Android Buffet podcast, where everything is fake and the points don't matter. Sorry, I heard Whose Line It Is Anyway is coming back on the air. But before we get to our normal recap of what's going on this week, we have a guest, and it's relatively late where he is, so we're going to introduce him first. Hello, special guest.
Yeah, hello. How are you?
Yes, would you like to introduce yourself to the crowd of people who don't know who you are and why you're here?
Sure. I'm Jim. I'm the lead developer for the Droidified developer team, and we've ported the Android OS to wireless routers.
Yes, and last week on the show, we were actually discussing that matter, and we weren't quite sure why one would do that.
It's a good question. What we're after is portability, so that you can develop apps using standard tools and put them on a variety of different of router platforms. That's mainly our focus.
But wouldn't there be concern about the overhead of, for at the very least, Java itself?
Yeah, and it's a valid concern. You won't be getting the same experience you would be getting on a phone or a tablet. But the nice thing about the Android OS is that it's designed to conserve battery life. And that means when the GUI's not active, everything basically sleeps. So the CPU impact is pretty minimal unless you're actually interacting with the device.
And how do you get a screen on a router?
Well, we've created a virtual screen driver, so the router thinks that it's a tablet, and Android talks to it just like it's a tablet. And then we have a remote GUI that runs in HTML5 browsers, or any browser today. So you bring up any browser, and it actually runs an Android screen remotely.
Interesting.
So outside of the, let's say, any specialized apps you're going to come up with and other developers might, what apps that already exist could you see running on this once it's actually released?
You mean apps for like a tablet or a phone?
Apps that currently exist.
No, apps for the router. What kind of apps would you run on the router that would require Android? Or be made easier because you're using Android?
Right. I don't think Android gives us anything unique as far as what apps you would run. I mean, you wouldn't want to run any tablet or phone apps really on the router. It's more specialized. What Android gives us is a standard platform for development and a fairly easy-to-use GUI. So we're not bringing anything revolutionary just because we're running Android. It's really the apps for the router that make the difference. So one of the features we've been focusing on is something called Power Boost. A lot of these routers have radios in them that can send out up to 800 milliwatts, which is a lot more power than you get with the router. And that's legal in North America. You can boost the power. And that's an app that we've developed that just happens to live at Android and sets the router up to put out some more power. And I guess I can expand on that.
You have obviously put a lot of time and energy into this, so I'm trying to understand the major benefit.
Right. Well, I think Android as a platform, it gives us a standard set of tools, and it's a known operating system. There are a lot of libraries and pieces in there that are pre-built, so we don't have to rebuild them. As far as the apps for the router, these need to be router specific. So we're not taking phone apps or tablet apps and throwing them on a router. If you look at some of the alternate firmwares that exist, they use Linux as kind of a standard platform. And if you go back about 5 or 6 years, running Linux on an embedded device was considered kind of crazy because the power and the RAM and flash weren't really there to support it. Right. And as things progress, Linux became standard. So everybody says, yeah, of course, Linux on an embedded device. And Android is Linux-based, but we see Android as kind of the next jump as, you know, a full GUI and a standard set of libraries. And it's expanding into a lot of different platforms. So even though we're a little bit early because the current routers are single CPU and a little underpowered for the current version of Android. The coming technology that we're seeing coming out are multiple CPUs and embedded GPUs, etc. So the Android-specific parts that seem kind of tough for a router are becoming easier and easier. But that's not really our focus. Our focus is really on a standard development platform that you can put on any hardware and get the same set of APIs and operating system.
And what would you develop?
As far as specific apps?
Right, for a router.
Right. Well, as I say, PowerBoost is one. Mesh networking is another one that one of our developers is really into, and that's where you can take one router. Yeah, and then you let's say you want to reach across your office or your house. And most of us run cables or what have you. With mesh networking, you can run a router in one corner and then run a router in the opposite corner wherever you're trying to reach, and they talk to each other wirelessly, and you can extend the range out with multiple routers.
And you could even go house to house and mesh network an entire neighborhood.
Sure, yeah, with the proper antennas. If you want to add some bigger antennas and boost the power, you can go pretty far.
I've seen.
Okay, that's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. I don't want to interrupt, but you have a Kickstarter project for this.
That's right. Yeah, we launched the Kickstarter about 2 weeks ago.
And according to this, I just want to check. You have 11 days to go, and you had a goal of $2,500, and you've gotten $6,706 with 205 backers.
That's right. Yeah, so it's been a bit popular.
Okay, so for somebody who pledges, they get an earlier copy?
Yeah, we're creating two groups of folks, the developer team for doing apps and the base firmware, and then a group of beta testers who want to test the early versions before we release.
So there seems to be a lot of interest, at least. You've gotten a lot more than your original goal.
Yeah, and a lot of folks are asking a lot of interesting questions and saying, can you, do VPNs? Can you, do this app, do that app? And that's kind of the direction we want to take it. We want to create the plumbing in the bottom and make sure everything runs and then give it off to the developers to come up with their own interesting idea and say, hey, I did this app. This can do this. You can run a firewall or plug in a camera and use it as a baby cam or something. So we kind of want to let it go to the developers and see where they go with it.
What kind of challenges are you running into when it comes to actual processing power? Most routers are pretty underpowered, aren't they?
The current generation, we're focused on a wireless technique called 802.11ac, which is a really high-speed wireless technique. And the current generation coming out is a single CPU MIPS-based set of chips. And it is a bit of a challenge. They're very similar to phones about 2 years ago, about that same power level. So we're in there optimizing a lot of stuff in MIPS assembler to make sure that they run on these single core chips. The next generation, which has been released the last couple months and is coming out this summer, are based on ARM dual core CPUs. So when we have a dual core CPU, it's a lot easier to run the GUI, for example, and not have to optimize it so much.
But in the current generation, based router?
Yeah, the new set of chips. Because of the technology that we're seeing developed for phones and tablets, the new set of chips are dual core, or we expect probably quad core in the next 6 months.
I'm just impressed by that to the point of speechlessness, the quad core routers.
It's technology that's coming out of the development we see on phones and tablets. So Broadcom, for example, announced a set of chips called the 4718 series, I believe. Last year, and that's a dual-core 1.2 gigahertz ARM router chipset, and that's out and coming out now this summer.
I'm just going to sit here for a moment and think of all the things I can do with that much power in a router.
Right? Wow.
Now, that does make a heavier operating system on a router seem more viable.
Well, that seems to be the direction everything's going. The phones and the tablets are driving this. And because the CPUs are there, they're putting them in more and more devices, embedded devices. And it's just kind of the general technology trend that things get much more powerful and it bleeds into other areas.
Except for cable boxes. Yeah. Cable boxes seem to be still stuck in the 80s.
I think that's one thing that we've all talked about on the Droidify team. We see this kind of converging out where it seems to be like the home is being centered around one appliance. And it looks like it's, if you look at the silicon that's coming out, a lot of these chipsets have DSL and cable built in and GPUs and what have you. Have you guys heard of the Raspberry Pi project?
Yeah, Jerry's going to laugh at that. I've actually tried to run this show off of a Raspberry Pi, somewhat mixed results. I think it's a software issue, but the show has to encode a 32 kilobit audio stream that's fed out. I tried to actually run that through a Pi. I actually think the problem is that I need to put in a USB hub. I think there's not enough power going to the audio, but every so often I try to tweak it again and try it, because if I could run the show off of a tiny box, I'd be very thrilled.
Well, I think that's it, because the Pi, for example, right now is a single core CPU with a GPU helping with the graphics. But something like that's coming, and you guys can see it. And when the $5 running a show or video or what have you off of it shouldn't be that big a deal.
Well, I just need to run a nice guest server. As soon as I can stream to a nice guest server, the entire computer running this can be replaced by something the size of a Pi.
Yeah, I think that's
my dream.
And I think that's what's happening.
Maybe I could do it on a router. Most of the router.
I think that'll be feasible. Yeah, have you guys heard of these little USB stick Android-based systems that you plug into an HDMI port on a TV?
And
you
can play
Ouya, for example?
Things like the MK802, the Ouya, and the ones that are sold online are mostly the Chinese knockoffs, but that are made by various factories very cheap and sent over. I have one of the earlier ones, the MK802. I think they're on the MK802 version 3 now.
And this is all technology that's coming out of phones and tablets, and then it's getting very cheap and ending up in embedded devices. So even though we're focused on wireless routers because of this high-speed wireless technology that's coming out now, you're seeing a convergence where these little devices are very cheap, they take very little power, and they have a lot of CPU and a lot of GPU to offer.
So are you thinking that once you get this on routers, if these other hobbyist boxes come out, that the software would be easily portable to, let's say, a USB stick like the one you mentioned or something in that area?
Right, and I also think that the silicon, the CPU that's coming out, the companies that are creating these are putting a lot of extra stuff in them, like DSL modems and cable modems and GPUs and what have you. So it's cheaper to put out a quad-core chip with all these things in it and then call it a cable box or a wireless router or what have you. And what we're after is that little appliance which is kind of evolving in the home, putting a standard operating system on it and then saying, oh, did you want to have it do this? Well, just download these apps.
Well, that's definitely something to think about.
So are you looking at starting a specialized app store? Because I would imagine that the apps that would go on an Android router are a completely different set of applications than would go on an Android phone or tablet or coffee maker.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have a prototype app store on our online website, and it has a bunch of prototype apps in it, so you can see a little bit of where we're going with that.
Well, the only other question is, to what degree would, let's say, the apps on the device be designed to, let's say, interface with an Android device that does have a screen? Let's say I want my tablet to control the Android-based router. You mentioned that for computers, there's a web-based interface. Is there going to be something specialized for people who happen to have other Android devices that they might want to use as a control surface for the router?
We use a standard protocol for that remote interface called VNC. So any VNC client can talk to it. We just happen to include one that runs in an HTML5 browser. So we have a YouTube video online that shows accessing a Droidify operating system on a router from an Android smartphone and from an iPad and from a PC at the same time. So did that answer your question?
Yes, I was just thinking of if I had any follow-ups. It may take me a moment.
Right.
Sometimes Jerry chimes in.
I don't know if you guys know that. Sorry?
Sometimes Jerry chimes in. It's very helpful sometimes.
I think I'm starting to get a grasp on why Android and a router would be a nice thing. And let me try and explain my my take on it, and you tell me how far off base I am.
Okay.
Life in a router is kind of hard. Your resources are limited. You're completely ignored, so any little bitty things can add up to create a completely unusable router. So developing for a router environment is kind of tough. Android already has a fairly robust development ecosystem with their SDK, Eclipse plugins, etc. Java, being a managed language takes care of some of the housekeeping for you and makes it easier to write applications that will be well behaved over a long period of time while being neglected, and opens the development of applications for this hostile environment. It opens that development to a wider range of people and thus a larger variety of applications, things that the router can do to make our life easier, like serving up media or
environment. I think it's a pretty straightforward environment. It's a big communications processor. The big issue you have is, how do you tell it to do what you want it to do rather than accepting everything you get when you buy it in the store? As I say, we're looking at where things are going on the technology side, and we see that this technology from the phones is being taken over to other devices. The interfaces today that we have in the routers are web-based. So you basically go in and fill out a form, and then you hit submit, and it clunks into the router, and it's supposed to do what you want it to do. And that works fine, but it's not a very rich interface. So the router often has to reboot, and it's a very limited interface. And then you're limited to whatever somebody built into that firmware when they burn it into the router. And there's some really good add-ons you can add to that, but it's not a very rich experience. So what Android brings to the equation is a platform which you don't have to create the guts again. You don't have to re-architect the operating system. Android gives a developer all these tools, and you can go in there and create a firewall app that does, say, SIP, if you know what that is, for communications. Or you can say, I want to plug in a USB camera, and you do an app for that. You say, hey, you can use this thing as a baby monitor, or like we're doing mesh networking or what have you. And that standard set of tools in an environment that I don't know if I would call it hostile. It's a real high-tech communications processor in there. It doesn't have this broad set of APIs and development platforms to allow developers to do that. So, for example, if you guys wanted to add something to your router, you would need to take down an entire Linux operating system and create whatever code you wanted to do and put that into that Linux operating system and then burn that onto your router. And that's a pretty big task. If you take something like Droidify, you could just create an app in Eclipse and then put it out there and say, hey, you can pop this on your router and it'll do X, and then you're done. So you don't need to do all the plumbing.
Well, what about memory? Because generally routers don't have a lot of memory that you could use to install new applications. So would you say the newer ones are likely to have it? Because while the manufacturers might put in faster processors to do more things, are they necessarily going to put in more capacity in order to store programs?
Okay, so you mean like flash storage?
Basically,
That's a really good question. It seems like what the manufacturers have done in the last year is they've looked at the NAND chips, like a USB flash drive chip, for example, and they decided it's cheaper to put in a pretty big NAND chip rather than to continue to use a different technology they used before called NOR, which was a bit expensive. So the routers that we're working on have 128 megabyte NAND chip, which is quite a lot of space for us. And the router firmware you get with your router takes up about a fifth of that. So about a fifth of the space is just empty. So there's a lot of storage there for us to use. And then on the RAM side, we've got 128 megabytes of RAM, which is on kind of the base level you want to be for Android. But that's expanding as well. So we don't really have an issue of storage, and a small issue with RAM, which is going to get easier and easier.
Right now, what is your premier router?
The main platform we're using for development is from Asus. It's called the RT-AC66U.
Mm-hmm.
And as I say, that's a single-core MIPS CPU with 128 megabytes of flash storage and 128 megabytes of RAM.
I was looking at the G version last time I was looking at a router. That's a very nice router.
The N66U, you mean?
That's what I was looking at. The AC66U is friggin' sweet as well.
It's about the same technology in both of those. Yeah, the difference is that the new AC wireless technology is about 1.3 gigabits per second over wireless, whereas the older N stuff was about a third to a quarter of that.
Wow. Who would have thunk Asus making routers?
If routers are more computers, then why not?
Asus is expanding.
Tablets, computers, routers.
And so far, everything that I've seen them make, they've done a pretty good job at.
That's why I'm holding a tablet manufactured by Asus next to a computer manufactured by Asus.
Maybe they should take over production of the Raspberry Pi.
Would that make it better, in your opinion? Or?
I don't know. I think anything would make the Raspberry Pi better.
Well, remember, it's not a commercial project. It's designed for hobbyists. There are other options. VIA is making a very small micro PC that's about $49. And let's see, there are a bunch of other companies. I keep seeing the news stories over and over again about these little tiny computers. And you never know. If somebody gets the idea that to put on two network ports, you could have yourself a router without Wi-Fi. And maybe you could have something like this.
I think I'm starting to understand the awesomeness that would be the ability to install additional functionality without the pain in the buttedness that is adding an extra package to Tomato.
Or even, you know, having to flash anything. If you can just install packages and have new programs work, again, package management is the big strength there.
I already know what I would write for this.
Should I ask?
No, hey.
I'm saying, are you willing to say, or do you want to?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. You know, just about every router made gives you the ability to forward ports, right?
Yes.
Well, one thing that I have wanted to do recently is forward port 80, but based on the host name, which I can't do without a reverse proxy on this side. Tomato and DDWRT have a package called Pound that, in theory, will do that, but is, shall we say, difficult to get installed and set up properly. So I would write a reverse proxy that would be much easier to administrate.
So just to summarize in the end, what we're looking at is ease of use for expandability once it's installed, the ability of developers to write something without having to go and build it into the firmware, and the possibility of a myriad of new interfaces, not just a simple form-based one. And so if somebody's interested, other than, let's say, going to Kickstarter and backing the project, what can they do?
Oh, as far as our project? Well, we have a website. It's www.droidify.com, and we have an open forum there. So we're looking for folks that have new ideas, both developers and users. So if you wanted to see a special proxy, I would go on there and say, hey, listen, can somebody develop this?
I want to develop it. So great. Now I'm going to have to sign up for an account on Kickstarter.
Well, you know, think positively. If you're backing a software project, you'll at least get some code. You know, I keep hearing about people who back hardware projects, and ultimately with a hardware project, if you can't make the thing work, the backers don't get anything. At least if you can't make a software project work, you could say, fine, we're going to give you a copy of the code.
Well, if you want to be on the cutting edge, we're releasing an alpha to our core development group in a couple days on Wednesday, I think.
But then we need to make sure that we got the right router.
Right.
Yeah, I know. I don't have that router currently. But Jerry, are you in the market for a new router right now?
I am. Okay. And particularly because I want a little bit extra range. So, and I know Best Buy carries the AC66U, so I may swing by there and pick one up.
So would you try an alpha version of the software?
Oh, hell yeah.
Just have another router ready in case there's a problem so you can switch back to it so you can do the show, just in case.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'll still have my – I'm wondering what level I should back it for.
I don't know. I've never actually backed anything on Kickstarter. Most of the really interesting things so far that I've seen, I haven't really seen many software projects. Most of them are hardware, and I'm always nervous about backing something where the inventor seems uncertain as to whether or not they're going to get to it. I'm fully in favor of backing software, as I said, because ultimately, if they fail, you can still at least see what they did. If a hardware project fails, you can't see what happens.
At what point are y'all going to ship the routers for the $250 and higher level contributors?
Well, we're hoping to get them out after Kickstarter ends in March, so hopefully by the beginning of April. You know, one thing I should throw out, if you want to develop the very first early versions, you need to have a serial cable so you can see the router booting. But the beta versions, you won't need that. And if anyone wants to reflash the original OEM router firmware, that's of course a standard feature.
All right, so I am going to pledge for the $250 level.
Wow, thank you. Well, we'll make sure you have a router and a cable shipped off, hopefully in the first week or week and a half of April.
Okay, well, Jerry, you're going to have to come back and give us a review.
I certainly will, and I know I am so going to write that reverse proxy.
Fantastic. Sounds like a great app.
Well, limited usefulness, but...
Well, it's useful if you want to host something at home. And there are plenty of people who host servers in their house for limited use.
And...
See, this is really riveting radio.
There we go. Jerry. Done. All right. I have pledged my $250 to this, and I look forward to playing with it.
Fantastic. Thanks very much.
I just want to refresh the page and watch the number go up. Oh, there it is. It went up.
Yep, that was me.
Okay. So would you like to hang around while we talk about non-Droidify-related news? Because I know it's late there.
And I'm curious. Why are you in Barcelona?
Well, we all have day jobs, and we just finished the Barcelona World Mobile Congress.
So how was the reception there? In terms, how did people react when they saw this? Or I assume you had a demo there in person.
No. This is for our day jobs. We're also working day jobs. So this is kind of our stealth project.
I misunderstood you.
Okay. Can you share what your day job is?
My boss probably wouldn't appreciate it. So
okay. No, we certainly.
I never tell anybody what I do for
on this podcast. If not any other, we understand the desire for privacy.
Yes, not a single person knows what either of us do.
Sorry, I didn't catch the last part.
I've been talking to Jerry for 138 episodes, and I know he's changed jobs at least once since that happened, but I have not actually heard the name, nor have I asked of the actual company he works for.
Well, we're hoping that this will become very popular and we can all quit our day jobs and focus on Droidify.
Well, good luck. I know that it is a dream of many people to quit their day jobs and focus on their dream, and I'm always in favor of encouraging that.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you for coming on.
Appreciate it. Thanks so much. And thanks so much
for your support. Thank you for defending your project.
Well, let's hope it becomes something interesting and popular.
Well, feel free to stop by again. Or feel free to drop us a line if there's anything you'd like us to mention to people. We do have reasonably nice listener base.
Will do. And if you guys have any questions for us, just shoot us a question. We'd be happy to hop in and answer it.
Okay. Well, we'll keep monitoring the situation as it develops. So as we hear news about your project, we may drop you a line to ask about it.
Fantastic.
Okay. All right. So we're going to continue with the normal program for the evening, and we're going to let you drop off.
Okay. Thanks so much, guys. Really appreciate it.
Enjoy Barcelona, man. It is awesome. Yeah, I know you're there for your day job, but if you can get out and away from the Congress to explore the city,
isn't it over?
A unique city among the world. There's not another one like it.
Yeah, it's beautiful here.
It's like porn for architects.
Okay, guys, well, I'm going to hop off and head back to bed. Thanks so much for having us on.
Okay. All right. Take care.
So that was fun.
I think I get it better now. I think I understand better. And
okay, so do I. There were a lot of things that I wasn't aware of, and that's why you invite people on to talk about their point of view.
I'm glad he actually decided to defend his project.
Well, that's the thing. Obviously anybody who starts a project feels very passionately about it, and we did say that we weren't quite sure how Android would work on there, and he did provide a very reasonable answer.
I would argue that the environment on a router is extremely hostile. It is the front line of defense for attacks from the outside world.
Well, also bear in mind that some of the software may be built at a much lower level. Since they're supporting Android, that doesn't necessarily mean that everything on the router is going to be built at the Java level.
True.
So some of the basic protections could be built at a much lower level.
I think they'll have to be.
And bear in mind, if you think about it, if you've ever looked at some routers, in order to prevent things from coming in while the router is being rebooted, there's some sort of default firewall that comes up until the custom firewall takes over.
Right.
So it may be that they have something at that level where if one of your firewall apps isn't installed, there's a low-level firewall that takes over and does basic protection.
Well, I seem to remember, at least for DDWRT, that they explicitly tell you that there's a time period when the router is first booting up where it is unprotected.
Well, that's a thing. For that period, it should be rejecting connections from the WAN and only accepting connections from the LAN.
Or rejecting connections from anywhere until it's up and running.
Yeah, but what if there's a problem?
I think that was he said there's a special cable so that you can watch it come up.
Well, that makes sense. So you go and plug something directly into it. But, you know, then you end up with all these security questions. But the thing is, I'm assuming that anybody who's using this is not concerned about somebody gaining physical access to their router and plugging a cable into it in order to override it. They're more concerned about outside forces.
Sure.
Well, again, since it's more of a home user than a commercial user, it's mostly the commercial users that are worried about people coming into their place of business and taking their information. Most home users that's not as much of a concern for them.
No.
But anyway, a few things in terms of housekeeping. I pulled up our Stitcher statistics because we were talking about it a few weeks ago. As of 2/25/13, which is the last reporting date I have here, there were 2,889 downloads of Android Buffet on Stitcher.
What?
93,832 minutes of listening. The average listening time per download was 12.27 minutes. So not everybody listened to completion. The average completion rate, which according to this was greater than 15 seconds, I'm not sure how to interpret that, was 51.3%. And it was included in 135 people's favorites lists. For the episode 136, which was our last episode, as of the reporting date here, which is showing at the 25th, there were 95 downloads of the last episode, 136, and average completion rate 65.37%. Okay, so we do have people listening on Stitcher. For the previous week's episode, 101 people. So we have anywhere from 100 to 150 people just going back to the last few weeks listening on Stitcher. So we welcome you, Stitcher people.
Hello, Stitcher people.
Yes. So we've confirmed people do listen to us on Stitcher, which is very nice of them. Anyway, so it's been a busy Android week and a busy other news week, so let's get to a few things. Maybe we'll cut a few and push them off till next week, since we're getting a little later in the hour. We'll just get to some of the news, and we'll push off some app stuff that came this week to next week. Judge Koh in the Apple versus Samsung case has slashed Apple's damages to be paid by Samsung by $450 million.
So from $1.05 billion to...
$567, I think, or just off the top of my head, I think it was $560. Somewhere in the 560s.
Jeez.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
$450 million off, you know, that's a discount.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you know how you hear those stories of people who go on bill overages. They call the company and they say, "We'll cut it by 50%, but it's like it's $10,000 worth of excessive overage, and you know we'll take $5,000." But Chrome has hit a 17-month low, whereas Internet
Explorer. What's up with that?
I'm not sure, but Firefox is back up.
Yeah, but Internet Explorer took most of that, right?
I wonder what's going on because they said that it wasn't Windows 8 related.
Did Internet Explorer 10 come to Windows 7?
I think I heard something about that.
I heard it was coming. I don't know if it...
That I'm not sure about because I don't
think it is.
Yet. I don't run Windows 7, but I did hear something to that effect.
Hmm. Well, I mean, if you scroll down that little bitty uptick, I mean, okay, there's a few graphs here, right? And there's the worldwide desktop market share. And in Internet Explorer, for the last few months, it's had an upward trend. And if you go down to the bottom where they show versions, that pretty much matches the upward trend of IE 10.
Okay, so it's possible. We'll have to look into it. Either way, yeah. I'm surprised so many people love IE 10.
But it may I'm just surprised be people are leaving Chrome.
Are we sure they're leaving Chrome or just Chrome is getting a smaller percentage of the market? It could just not be growing. It could just be remaining stable. It's hard to say.
Yes.
Either way, I'll stick with the combination of Chrome and Firefox.
I can't stand Firefox.
I know. But I'm on Chrome at the moment, so I switch back and forth.
Sure.
Let's see. Pandora has capped free monthly usage on mobile to 40 hours per person. So if you don't pay them, then on a mobile device, you'll only be able to listen to 40 hours of Pandora. And this is because things cost more money than they used to. 40 hours is still fairly generous for a company to give you of free streaming music.
I'm sorry, say that again?
I think 40 hours of free streaming music is pretty generous for a company.
Yes.
Even if, you know, it's not unlimited free music for free. Actually, that's a wrong. Unlimited streaming music for free. The FCC is going to look into the legality of unlocking cell phones. We're still awaiting.
They kind of have to now, right? Due to the
no, the president. The petition? The president's office has to respond. So the
I'm sure he's not just going to respond off the cuff, right? He's going to have some research done first, is kind of what I took this FCC looking into it.
Well, I'm not sure if they're related. It might just be that they independently saw that this was something that they wanted to look into, but the problem is they may not have legal grounds to get involved. So they're going to consult their lawyers, apparently, to decide whether or not, should they choose to get involved, are they legally allowed to? So do their powers actually include any power that allows them to regulate this? Because it might require an act of Congress, for all we know.
Doesn't everything?
No. Many things do. Many things that didn't when the Constitution was originally established. That reminds me, you know what today is. While I was waiting for you to finish your technical difficulties, on March 4th, 1789, in New York City, the first Congress of the United States met, putting the United States Constitution in effect. So essentially today is the anniversary of the establishment of Congress. So the first Congress met effective today. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry, I was reading that while I was waiting for you. Researchers at the University of Illinois are working on a rechargeable, flexible battery. So they've been talking about flexible displays, but if you want to power your flexible display, you're going to need a flexible battery.
Ooh, I just thought of another app for the Droidify.
What?
Okay, so there are apps that let you basically turn your router into a public access point where people would, like, pay to use your internet access, right?
Yeah, and there are a few different versions.
Well, what about one that, I mean, I don't know if I would want to pay or send my account information over an unknown router, but imagine that the router took bitcoins. Then the router wouldn't care who the person is. It would be completely anonymous from the point of view of the user. Of the accessor.
Well, there are other things, you know. There are other forms of anonymous payment, as long as you want to work with them. I'm sure we can think of a few more. Either way, there are a lot of interesting options for this, and I look forward to seeing how people use it. See, the interesting part of some of these projects is not necessarily the developers. It's how people use it after the developers create the platform.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, all the interesting stuff comes from creating a platform, right? I mean, yeah. That's...
But speaking of platforms, do you know what's happening on March 13th, Jerry?
Is it Friday?
Is that Friday? I don't think it's a Friday.
I don't know. No.
March 13th is next Wednesday.
Yeah, that's when their Google I.O. registration opens up.
You going to try again? I know it didn't work out last year. But
it didn't work out last year. I was so disappointed. I was sad.
Well, you can come to
me. I just don't think I could take that rejection this year.
Thank you, George McFly. Okay. Anyway, you're welcome to come to
NELF. I thought you'd enjoy that reference.
Yes. You could come to NELF. I'm going to go up there for a day. I can't go up there for the whole weekend, but I'm going to go up because I've always wanted to meet the door-to-door geek in person, in three dimensions.
In meat space.
Oh, is that what they call it?
Well, see, I don't know.
It was interesting because he told me that Jonathan might be able to pick me up.
Yeah.
I'd be very impressed.
Okay.
Wouldn't you?
No.
Why not? I'm a pretty big guy. Wouldn't it be really hard for somebody to pick me up?
Maybe he's been working out.
Okay. I'd be even more impressed if he intended to pick me up in a car.
Okay.
Okay. Well, that's a different 80s movie, sorry. Anyway, moving along. XDA has made Swappa its official marketplace. So if you were nervous about Swappa, it is now endorsed by XDA developers. As their official marketplace, they have actually shuttered their own marketplace. They actually did that a little while ago because it had become untamed, I think was the general consensus.
Hmm.
You know, it required a certain amount of regulation if you're doing commerce, and it was basically an open forum. I have a droid. I'd like a droid. then people get cheated and blame XDA. At least SWAPA is regulated by their owners. Murph is back in the chat room. He said that I shouldn't count on Jonathan picking me up. Apparently he drove him down to Self, if you may recall, and he did not offer to drive once.
That's funny. Yep.
And Murph, I'm going to try to come up for a day. I can't come up for both days of the weekend because I have to work. But I will look forward to seeing you there. Feel free to tell me if you want me to bring you anything from New York. Although you're coming from New Jersey, so I can't see why you would want me to. Let's see. You can breathe new life into an old smartphone. I just found this interesting. This was an article that came out this week about how to a weekend project for breathing new life into an old smartphone. And these aren't necessarily all the ideas, but I just wanted to advance the idea that a smartphone, like the gentleman from Droidify said, is essentially a little computer. So there may be a project on what you can do with a router and Android, but what about what you can do with an old phone that you're not using as a phone anymore?
I think this is interesting. I would have liked to have seen a more Android-centric article. This is fairly iPhone-centric.
Well, I just sort of like the idea.
Sure.
I linked to the article because it is a good idea. Once we get rid of the phone or we no longer use it as our primary phone device, what do we do with it? We own it. You know, you could sell it to somebody else. But I have a Droid 2 sitting here on the desk that plays our opening theme song. And a few times, you may remember, I've actually had the Skype connection for the show running through an old phone. Not sure if you remember that, but it's been done. So why not use your old phone for something? So I wanted, you know, some of these ideas, again, are not iOS-centric. So why not run Skype on your phone? Why not use it as a smart thermostat? I just thought that was an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
I like
the idea of using it as a webcam.
Why not?
Because I don't have a webcam. But I have some old Android phones.
Yeah, but you can use it for a lot of different things. So if you have an interesting story about what you've used your old phone to do, we'd like to hear about it. Drop us a line. If you don't feel comfortable with our email address, that's podcast@androidbuffet, you can go and look at it on, let's see, Facebook. You can drop us a line. You can drop us a line on Google+. I'm sure Kevin will. You can drop us a line on Twitter @androidbuffet. You can leave us a voicemail at 2012-WENICA. And you know what, Jerry, what I just suddenly realized?
We need to talk about...
We haven't yet. We were so excited about our guest that we forgot to talk about those people who are partially responsible for us being here.
DYN.com!
Yes, aren't they great?
I like them.
Yes. And I was listening to another show this weekend. You know, sometimes while I'm cleaning up the house, I go and turn on that guy who does the radio show on weekends, Leo Laporte.
Mm-hmm.
He annoys me sometimes because I don't always like his answers.
Right.
And I go and yell at the radio or yell at the television if I happen to have brought up the audio there. You know, why is he telling people that? But do you know what he was recommending for somebody who wanted a dynamic IP address for their house? He was recommending
DYN.com?
Yes. They've been around for so long that even Leo Laporte endorses them.
I don't think
that they are an advertiser on there. But he spontaneously came out and talked about their most famous product, which is personal DNS use.
Yes, of course.
Well, again,
I mean, even routers even stock routers come with a way to hook them up to DynDNS.com. Yes.
Yeah. Well, DynDNS was their older name when, you know, then they expanded to email and they just dropped it to Dyn. But let's say that you're interested in, you know, dynamic DNS service through them, which is their classic service, and you want the full professional service. You know, they do, I think, still have a legacy product. But Dyn DNS Pro is available to you for only $20 a year. That allows you to connect remotely to your DVR webcam, and that's for home users. And for $10 more, you get some extra features for low traffic sites. And you know, after that, you get into the enterprise stuff. But again, what's wrong with giving them, you know, $20 a year is fairly reasonable. And for $20 a year as a personal user, you get your custom domain at dyndns.org.
Ooh.
For the $30 a year, you can have your own personal domain. You get up to 30 host names at dyndns.org. For $30 a month, you get 75 records of your own personal domain, one zone. For the personal account, you get not only an A record, but an MX record, so you can have a mail server. If you go for the $30 account, you can not only have all that, but you can have CNAMEs, NS pointers. For those of you who aren't familiar with this, these are different types of entries that they allow you to have. So that includes things like aliasing. You have forays, which is IPv6. So you have a lot of different features. You get a username and password for the account. You don't get any reports for usage. That requires the full business account. The update API, which is supported by many routers, which Jerry mentioned. The basic $20 a year account gets you email support. For an extra $10 a year, you can get phone support as well, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. So that's pretty good, and that's just if you're an individual. So if they're willing to do that much for an individual, if you want the full service, which is available in 30, 60, 95 a month, or they even have the super business package which is managed full managed DNS at $200 a month, then you're going to get all sorts of extra things above that, including you're going to get 24/7, 365 day a year service. So for $200, somebody will answer the phone at 3 in the morning if you have a problem, and that's what you want.
366 days on leap years.
It's not a leap year this year.
I know, but yeah. You know when a leap year comes around.
Yeah, so just remember, for faster internet, for more reliable internet, for the services that they provide, which are available for individuals at reasonable prices, and if businesses for reasonable prices for business, I'm going to say that $200 a month is not reasonable for me as an individual, but that's actually very good for a business. What you can do is visit our special offer. And Jerry, do you know what that URL is?
DYN.com/podcast30.
Yes. So that's, of course, you can do that, or you can go and visit and use the promo code podcast30 at checkout. That'll get you 30%
off. 30%
off? Yes. That's wow. Almost as much of Jerry has lost in weight in the last year. I'm sorry. I have to help make sure people remember it. So we thank them again for their support of this program. And we want to, of course, also thank, before I forget, the Tech Podcast Network, home of many fine shows that you can also listen to in addition to ours. These are shows, of course, that also are tech-themed. For example, you can go and listen to the Audacity to Podcast. Have you heard of that show, Jer?
No.
Well, you know that I use Audacity to run the board here.
I do.
Yes, so this week on the Audacity to Podcast episode 116, they talk about 20 more or more podcasting tools that are worth paying for. So Audacity is free, but they're going to talk to you about things you might want to spend money on. So it's not just software, but it's also what audio equipment, what plugins, and what other things that it might be worth spending money to get, even though your editing software is free. Check it out over at the Tech Podcast Network. A few other things here. Let's get back to the news. Google Plus Hangouts has added a sign language interpreter app and an expanded series of shortcuts.
Just wow.
I just wonder, do they supply the sign language interpreter as well? Or do you have to supply him or her yourself? So is there somewhere at Google where the, you know, when you start up the app, the sign language interpreter is told that they're needed? Or do you have to supply your own interpreter?
I don't know.
Let's see, what else do we have here? Oh yes, Google released Google Plus Sign-In, allowing users to sign into apps using their Google Plus credentials. And when you sign into a website, you can add the companion mobile app with a single click. And unlike Facebook seamless sharing, your sharing is selective, and it's for doing, not just for viewing. So essentially, Google, unlike Facebook, thinks that if you're sharing something with other people, you should actually want to do it, instead of just dumping everything that you do automatically into other people's lives.
Sweet.
I sort of like that idea, but the Google Plus sign-in includes a new Google Settings icon in your launcher, which right now doesn't do anything very interesting, but hopefully eventually it will be used to unify settings from various Google apps. Have you seen it, Jerry?
I have not.
It's a little green icon. It's probably been pushed to your device already.
Oh, no. So,
yep. Check right now. Do you have your device with you?
It's in my jacket, which is up on the wall, which is not within reach. So, no.
Okay, well.
I will look for the green icon later, though.
Okay, not that exciting. It's just mostly it links to the map settings and a few other things. But eventually, now that it's there, I'm sure they'll do something with it. Google has released full binaries for the Nexus 4 and Nexus 7 to AOSP. These are the first devices that have 100% of the necessary drivers and code to build the device. Usually, you have to rip something out of the binary, but they've released everything you need. Let's see. With the new version of Sense that was released for the HTC One launch, there were a few facts that came out based on HTC's study of people's behavior. Most people apparently don't differentiate between widgets and apps. Widgets aren't widely used. Fewer than 10% use any other than the basic, let's say, pre-installed widgets that are on the screen when they start. And after the first month, 80% of people do not modify their home screens much.
Sure, I can say that.
Well, interesting facts. A few other things. The Android x86 team, which is porting Android to Intel-based processors, has released a new build based on Android 4.2. So if you want Android on your computer, give it a shot. You can put it on a USB key and boot it up. Google has started using HTML5 and WebM for premium content, which is very interesting because HTML5 and some sort of system that allows for premium restricted content might mean that Flash might finally die. It can't happen too soon for me. I don't know about you. I'm not a big fan of Flash. For one, there are video acceleration issues. Let's see. At Mobile World Congress, they actually showed an E-Ink Android phone that runs for weeks on a charge. So I just wanted to mention this. E-Ink is what, for example, the traditional Kindle uses. So would you be interested in an E-Ink phone or tablet, Jerry?
No.
Okay.
I wouldn't. To me, pixels and colors and responsiveness on a display is extremely important.
Well, the one that they showed in the video, if you actually look, they said that the display was not properly calibrated, so it wasn't picking up correctly. But the question is, would this be a device good as a companion for something? Because it would last weeks on a charge. What if you had an E-Ink Android-based remote control? You don't need color on your remote control, do you?
No, but it's awesome.
Okay. No, I'm just saying there are a lot of options for this, and there are a lot of benefits that E-Ink creates. What about...
Without a doubt, yes.
What about, you know, there are things that haven't really been done. What about an E-Ink Android-based wall calendar? So you hang it up on the wall, and it shows you information. But it changes because it's E-Ink, and it's controlled by... In the back, it's actually a very simple Android device. There's potential. I'm very interested to see what E-Ink can do. Samsung has revealed a new venture called Wallet. We'll hear more about that when Samsung has its Galaxy S4 event later, so we'll come back to that. If you're interested in trying Ubuntu Touch, builds will soon be available for more than 20 devices, so you can install it on things from a Galaxy S3, a Galaxy Nexus, which I know Murph has, and more. Oh, and I forgot, Murph wants me to bring a subway car to Nelf. I'll see what I can do. Would you settle for a bus? I think I have one around here somewhere. We're going to quickly go, since we're running a bit over today, we're going to quickly go through one or two apps, and we'll save the rest for next week. I promised Dan Fry that I would mention that Myth TV for Android 1.10.0 has been released. It offers options for transcoded and native file playback, with the option to queue the transcoding job for future, multi-host support, and a numerous amount of bug fixes. So if you run Myth TV, try it. I don't use it that much for a different reason. My Myth TV setup hasn't been working properly lately. Dan actually told me he had the same problem, but he found a solution that isn't an option for me. Cable card. I'm still saddened by that every time I think about it.
Yes.
Nothing personal, Dan, but I can't use cable cards. I'm so sad about that. Let's see. This is very important. The Red Cross has released a tornado app complementing their hurricane, earthquake, and wildfire apps. So if you happen to live in tornado country, you can now download an app that will tell you what you need to know. There were some updates with Chrome. We'll talk about them more next week.
You know, the tornado app, we breeze over it, but a tornado app
is very useful. I'm sure you
would be more useful than a hurricane or an earthquake or a wildfire app. Well, and I say this because with a hurricane, everybody gets lots and lots of notice that there's a hurricane coming. It's not a surprise. You get days of notice. With an earthquake, yeah, there is no notice. It happens. Then you find out about it. And a wildfire is, you know, there's smoke and stuff that, you know, kind of warns you. And also probably not that big a danger to your standard city dweller. Tornadoes, on the other hand, your notice of them is measured in hours or minutes. And when you always have your phone on you, having that tornado warning come up on your phone, extremely useful. So I'm excited about this. It doesn't necessarily affect me personally. However, you know, back where my parents are, Tornado Alley, extremely awesome. Go Red Cross. I'm done.
Okay. As I said, we're going to skip over most of the other updates because they can wait till next week. I will mention just one, Pocket Cast 4.0 was released. It's a complete rewrite. I'm going to be fiddling with it a bit and see how it compares to Dog Catcher, which is still my primary podcast user.
Oh, please come back with a good review, man. Okay. I so want to dump Dog Catcher.
I fiddled with it with the Pocket Cast so far. It looks very nice, but I want to try it in real life and test out the syncing feature.
Sure.
Yeah. There's one feature that I haven't found a podcatcher that it does. What I want is this. There are many podcasts that do both an audio and a video feed.
Mm-hmm.
I want seamless syncing. Let's say that I'm on my phone and I want to listen, but let's say then I happen to go to my tablet and for whatever reason I want to sit at a desk and switch over to the video mode and still be at the same place in the So I wanted to recognize that it's the same program and seamlessly switch from streaming the video version to streaming the audio version or back and forth. I'm thinking of writing a letter to them about that as a suggestion. What do you think?
I think the possible problems are multitude, but I think it would be awesome.
Well, no, the problem is that the files might not be exactly the same.
Yeah.
But you can...
You give it a 5 second, you know...
You can always rewind or fast.
To within like the last 5 seconds. So wherever you listen to, your sync point is 5 seconds back from that. You should be good.
Yeah, and you can always rewind a little, but it'll put you to the same general place. And maybe you want something that works that way.
It would be like the Kindle Whisper Sync for podcast, but audio and video, not just a single medium.
Yeah, and bear in mind...
Although, let's be honest, even if it was just for a single medium, you know, your audio syncs up, that one itself would be an awesome feature.
Well, they have that.
They do?
That's one of their new features. The audio will sync between devices. So essentially...
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, I just want it to be able to also recognize... I think it should recognize that a podcast may have a video and an audio feed. Just for the sake of it, should recognize it's the same thing. And recognize on different devices, I may want to look at one or look at the other. And be aware of that. I haven't seen a podcatcher that treats audio and video as aspects of the same thing as opposed to two different things. So even if you look at Dogcatcher, they're different tabs. But what if it's the same program? Shouldn't I be, even if I have to tell it that they're the same program and link two together, why not? Anyway, the rest of our stuff, there are some other app stories, but we're going to get to them next week. We'll push them off. Maybe next week will be slow. Jerry, I do want to talk to you about the end of the month, though. There are some holidays coming up. I'm not sure if you're a big Easter person.
Nope.
Neither
am I. The whole rabbit laying eggs thing, I never quite got.
I don't understand that one either, but I don't have to, for obvious reasons. Okay. Where am I here? Okay, Monday the 25th, that evening is the start of Passover. So I will unfortunately not be available to do a podcast that evening, or the subsequent Monday the 1st. Would you like to reschedule for an alternate day for those two?
Sure.
Okay.
Tuesday or Sunday?
Well, let's see. In both cases, Tuesday would be bad. Sunday the 31st would be bad. The 24th, I believe I'm available. But let me double check everything and get back to you. We still have two weeks to go.
Sure.
So as far as I know, it might be the 24th and then Wednesday the 3rd.
Okay.
But I'll confirm everything with you. I just have to go and consult with... I was told by my mother, since I'm taking the week off, and I'm going to visit my family for the holiday, which may be stressful. My mother told me that she needs help preparing before the holiday, which starts on Monday. She said something about on Sunday, me being her slave. Yeah. Well, she wants to do it before my brother and his kids get there. So I don't have kids or a family, so I'm going to be the slave. Now, we all need hobbies, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I have many more interesting things to talk about, but I'm going to save them for next week, since we're running a bit over today. Jerry, I'm sorry about your continued technical problems.
Can we rant about that for... Can I rant about that for a minute?
Yes, before we go.
Maybe you can help me out.
Okay.
Okay, so basically I had a computer that was fairly stable, but I didn't like the way it looked.
Okay.
You know, case-wise. It had the water cooler hanging off the back, and blah, it was... I didn't really... Anyway, I also wanted some extra...
Internal
expansion slots on the back.
Okay.
So I got a new case.
Yeah.
And I moved everything into the new case.
Okay.
Basically, it's the exact same stuff, except I put all new hard drives in it. So I got everything set up and running, and it was freezing on me. Just, you know, the main screen would go white or gray or white with vertical stripes on it, and the computer just froze.
What do the logs say? Does it indicate
anything? No logs. It's like the clock just shut down.
Well, let me ask
like
you, if the
computer's doing its thing and then nothing.
Have you tried running a program that keeps track of the temperature somewhere on the screen?
Yes.
So that you
can monitored the temperatures.
Is it going up?
No, it stays nice and chilly. My CPU sits around 30C, and my GPUs hover around 42 degrees C.
And are you using the same operating system that using the? You said you had new hard drives. Did you reinstall the operating system, or is it the original one?
It's the same operating system, a fresh install.
Okay, so you don't have the possibility of anything that changed causing some sort of odd cruft because you started from scratch. That's really odd.
Well, so after rebooting my system probably 30 times this morning, somebody said something about bad memory. I have never in my life seen bad memory.
Have you tried Memtest?
I ran Memtest on it, and it immediately started popping out errors.
Okay. Did you try reseeding the memory?
I did not. I just went and bought some new memory.
Is it working better now?
And I came back, put it in, ran Memtest for about an hour, and no errors. Sweet! Okay. So I started it up, and I want to say it ran solid for like 6 hours.
Until when?
And then until about an hour before we started our podcast, and it froze. Exact same.
Very strange. I'm wondering what it could be.
So I ran Memtest again. I was running Memtest up until like 5 minutes before you called me the first time.
Okay.
And no errors. And then as I was rebooting, one of the times where I was trying to get Skype to work when you were calling me, it froze again. So what in the heck could this be?
That's what I'm trying to figure out.
I'm wondering, since I installed the operating system with bad memory, is it possible that part of the installation got corrupt? And now I just, with good memory, I need to reinstall the OS.
I've never heard of that. I suppose it's within the realm of possibility. But see, the odd thing is that that would spit out an error that would cause something to fail. I've never heard of it causing something to be misconfigured. Now you can try wiping the operating system and starting from scratch again and seeing if that makes it more stable. That couldn't necessarily hurt, but I've never heard of memory causing that problem.
I know.
But, you know, you know what Sherlock Holmes said on the subject.
About once you've eliminated all possibilities, whatever remains, regardless of its likelihood, must be the answer.
Basically. So essentially, if you keep eliminating options, eventually, even if you don't figure out what's causing the problem, maybe you will solve the problem without realizing what it ever was.
Well, I'm worried that it's a sketchy video card.
Do you? Well, let me ask you a question. You have multiple video cards, right?
I do.
What would happen if you went through standard diagnostic testing, you removed all but one of the video cards, ran it for a little while, then put in another one, then essentially gradually added to the complexity of the system?
That would be such an extreme pain in the butt because they're water-cooled, so they're all joined together at the hip.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out what the best option is. I'd say trying to minimize things. That's usually the standard diagnostic technique. Remove as much as possible and then gradually put in each piece, test that piece. But in your problem, since you have so much stuff in there.
Yep.
That might be an option. What about your power supply?
You
said you put in new hard drives. Is it possible that because of all the stuff you have in there, you've reached a peak?
It's a 1K power supply.
Do you have a tester?
Yes.
You could check to see.
But it's not going to test it under load.
No, I'm saying you can test whether or not the power is actually being put out reliably.
No, the tester I have just has lights on it.
Yeah, usually it shows whether or not it's delivering the right amount of power. But again,
I think it's so cheap it just determines whether it's delivering any electricity.
Okay, so it doesn't have the different rails and the different pins. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, because that occurred to me as a possible problem. If the power supply is putting out bad power, it could cause stuff like that. But the problem is the more working parts, the more complicated you make a system, the more things that could go wrong, which is why the problem is what you mentioned, which is it's not easy to remove one part. But that's, I would say, try the software. If that doesn't work, you may have to just remove as much as possible, put a piece in, test it, and keep going until you isolate which piece may be responsible.
Yeah, not fun. And this is why I hate hardware.
Well, I like hardware, but I discovered over the years that the more time I spend inside a computer, the more bloody I get. I always cut myself when I'm working. I'm very clumsy sometimes. I never bled on the computer, but I always end up with Band-Aids afterwards. Either way, I like building computers. I don't really have the need for 50 computers because I just keep building them. Today, I came close to starting a project to build a mini ITX system. But then I said to myself, what am I going to do with the system I have there now? I may end up with a smaller one, but I'm going to end up with another box that works perfectly well. It's just too big. Anyway, I talked myself out of buying that beautiful Prodigy mini ITX case with the 5 drive bays. That would be perfect for a NAS-like system. Ah, to dream. On that note, why don't we wrap it up?
All right.
Okay. We will see everybody next week.
And so, bye.
Bye.